Sherry, tell me about a time when you came close to pulling off amazing, but then one thing went wrong.
Okay, so there are so many times, and they're so sad and so tragic, because to be so close to amazing, like within reach.
And to
reach,
have planned so carefully for it.
But this was a celebration I was doing for somebody who had, back when I was in direct sales, and she had achieved something big, and it was at our monthly meeting, and I used to go all out. We'd roll out a red carpet, and then we'd have the CD of You're Simply the Best, and she would come down the red carpet, and we'd all be cheering and waving, and we'd have a crown for her, and all that kind of fun stuff, and glitter. I was big on glitter and glittery confetti. This particular day, I had everything all set up, and we went to push the play button on the CD, and it didn't play. And so it was completely anticlimactic. I mean, we whooped and cheered, but after like two or three attempts, and at some point you have to quit trying and just move forward. But I just felt so badly. And I later realized what I had done is I'd set the CD on the table that was covered with glitter, and then I'd put it back in the CD player. Well, static electricity had made it so a bunch of glitter had stuck to the bottom of the CD, which is why it refused to play. And so here I was working so hard to be amazing, but the very things I had done to be amazing had ruined part of the amazingness. Like, amazing sabotage is amazing. I mean, that's just wrong.
Okay, well, so I don't know if this was subliminal after I read the word glitter in our notes, but I have a glitter story too.
No
and
way.
I have to say that Nolan recently said, I hope I don't offend our listeners, but he said, Mom, glitter is the herpes of the crafting world.
Oh my goodness. He did not.
So anyway, so my story kind of proves this point.
Okay, I'm just going to randomly giggle for the rest of this time together. Just know that. If I'm laughing at something that's not funny, I'm thinking of that.
It's such a Nolan remark, and I will think of it sporadically and giggle too. So anyway, crafting, I like crafting, but I'm really kind of terrible at it. And especially when I was teaching school, I taught elementary school, so I would like to try to do crafts sometimes with my kids. Our art teacher at our school was genius, and the work that would come out of her classes with my kids was just so amazing. And the work that I would lead my kids through was always like, what happened? Well, so I don't know why I thought I could pull this off, but I had just had Anson. I was staying home, but one of my best friends was still teaching. And I missed the classroom. Mm. So I told her at Christmas that I would come in and I would do this amazing craft with her kids. What was I thinking? I've never pulled this off before. And so I came up with this craft that was making a little snow globe in baby jars.
Aww.
And, you know, we would glue a little person on the lid, and then we would put water and glitter inside of the baby jar, and we'd screw it and it would make a little snow globe. And sure enough, they were cute as anything until they sat there for a few minutes in the cold water, and I didn't read about the kind of glue to use.
Oh, no.
And so all the little characters popped off and just were free floating around in stupid snow globes.
The outer space snow globes.
So the kids thought it was hilarious that they could bang that little, I don't know, angel around in there or whatever.
Not quite Pinterest perfect.
So close to amazing.
Well, this is Sherry Gregory.
And I'm Amy Carroll.
And you're listening to Grit and Grace, Good Girls Breaking Bad Rules, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well.
Today, we're processing what we learned from our interview with Stacey Thacker, author of Fresh Out of Amazing.
I just love that title.
I do too.
When I first saw it, my first thought was, what does that mean? Never mind. I know exactly what it means. It doesn't need an explanation. So, and she said it was her coming out of hiding book. So talk to us about a time that you felt fresh out of amazing and realized it was time for you to come out of hiding.
This is more general than a specific episode, but, you know, I had realized that perfectionism was my way of hiding. Mm. And I say perfectionists are either they're hiding out of shame, or they're keeping you at arm's length so you won't actually know you're perfect. And I really thought that being amazing was what other people wanted. You know, I was like, well, if I'm an amazing friend, then everybody will want to be my friend. And so I tried to be the perfect, in quotation marks, friend, you know, or if I'm an amazing wife, then Barry won't ever think about turning around, you know, that kind of thing. And what I learned is, are you still thinking about herpes?
Maybe.
You keep giggling. I can see you.
Okay.
I'm being serious here, Sherry.
Straight face, straight face. What you realized, I'm right here with you, Amy Carroll.
But what I realized is it wasn't being amazing, that I needed to come out of hiding, because it was my vulnerability and my flaws that really linked me to other people. And so these days, what I pray is that my internal maturity would exceed my external image, because my external image was about trying to create amazing.
That is so good. I'm going to say that again. You said, I've learned to pray that my internal maturity will exceed my external image. That'll preach, Amy. That'll preach.
It works on me hard.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I had a come out of hiding experience just the other day. I had a hard conversation with my daughter, Anne Marie, and it was hard because she needed to talk to me about some very real consequences that she's experiencing because of some of my parenting choices. Now, I just want to be clear, she was respectful, she wasn't blaming, she wasn't shaming, but she was tired of pretending, and she was tired of the silence and of us hiding behind the idea that we were just amazing and that everything was okay. And so here's the thing that I'm discovering now that I'm a few days out from it. And now that the topic is out in the open and we've started talking about it, it's going to be an ongoing conversation. I don't have to worry about being found out. I don't have to worry about keeping up appearances. And I woke up the morning after our conversation, and I'll admit I was tired. You know, I was kind of drained. It had been, like I said, a hard conversation. But I had this incredible sense of peace and gratitude. And I didn't expect that. What I'm used to is the, oh dear, oh my, we can't talk about it. What happens if? Then she'll, then that, you know, all the anxiety and the angst of not talking. And I realized that actually, in this case at least, hiding was actually harder than facing the truth. And that was a really good realization for me.
That's so powerful. And it really ties into the idea that Stacy talked to us about, having God breathe life into our dry bones. So it sounds like even in coming out of this place of hiding, that it breathed new life in you. Have you ever had that experience before?
It's interesting, because about 15 years ago, I was ready to completely quit teaching. I had horrible time with classroom management. I took everything the kids did and said personally. And so I would come home just, again, drained because of what was happening in the classroom. And I found a person whose name was Fred Jones, and Tools for Teachers. And I literally went to his seminar twice in a row. Like, it's a 3-day seminar, and I went one year, and then I went again. And it was so clearly God at work. And it really revolutionized everything for me. Like, I discovered names for what I was doing. I mean, he called teachers who could not set rules and maintain order in the classroom, he called us weenie teachers, and that we basically weenied out. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Oh no, he really called it like it was. But the thing he did is he had studied teachers who mean business, and he had literally taken it down to the body language. Like, whether I was facing the class with my toes pointed towards them and my shoulders pointed toward them versus facing the whiteboard and turning only partway around, like that kind of thing made a huge difference in signaling my intent. And so part of what took 3 days in the seminar was we were practicing, and we practiced keeping a straight face, and we practiced keeping our adrenaline levels down and breathing. And, you know, I talked to my brother about it later. He said, oh, you learned anger management techniques. I'm like, but I wasn't angry. It was like, oh, evidently all of these self-soothing, calming techniques are very similar. And what it did was it helped me break old bad habits, and I was able to start enjoying teaching again. And you know me, I can handle failure a little bit better when I understand why I failed. And so being able to go back into the classroom, rearrange my classroom, like, I got rid of my teacher's desk. All it ever did was hold my piles of junk anyways. I learned management by walking around. And here's the thing, once I knew what I was doing wrong and why it was wrong, and then started applying the new stuff, it all worked. I mean, like, it worked like true magic, and it really did. I mean, I've been a teacher since pretty much birth almost. And so all of the years of dreading the classroom and feeling like I was an utter failure, to have that transformed and turned around in a really short space of time, that was absolutely God breathing new life into dry bones. How about you?
Well, I love your example because, and mine's a little bit different. So it's kind of cool for our audience, I hope, to hear two different things. But, you know, mine was more like God entered into a space where I really wasn't doing anything but praying. It was more of a passive, like, help me, Jesus, kind of thing. Whereas you knew you needed help and you did something intentional. And as you walked into that intentional space, God did his thing. And so I love that because it shows that it can happen both ways. Sometimes he's asking us to take hold and do something intentional like you did. My best example was this podcast, really, because it was just in a season of dry bones and I was starved for connection, which we've gotten through this podcast, even though we're coast to coast, it's so cool. And it just breathed fresh life and creativity. My worst nightmare as an extrovert is sitting in a silent room with a blank screen in front of me trying to create. And what I didn't know, and what God allowed, the way he worked, was that he connected me with you and he breathed fresh life and fresh creativity in, because I'm a verbal processor, duh.
Yay!
So,
yay for social learning and collaboration.
Yes, indeed.
And for God using anyway. You know, I love how she said, if God can breathe life into these dry bones, he can do anything. And so that the encouragement for all of us who feel fresh out of amazing, whether we know why or we don't know why, whether we find a training program that helps us, or we just don't even know what the first next step might be, that God is a God who can do this for all of us. She also said that we can be busy without being burdened. And for girls like you and me, that means we don't have to lie awake at 2:37 a.m. with the weight of the world on our chest. So,
what?
I know, craziness. So what does it mean for you to be busy without being burdened? What does that look or feel like? Or how does that happen?
This is such a pertinent question for, I think, anyone who is listening, all of us, because we just live in a culture where busy is virtuous or something. But we're all so busy. But I can look back and I can think there's a line between seasons when I've been busy and not burdened, and seasons when I have been busy and very burdened and laying awake at 2:37. So what's the difference? It's just the source. Where's the source of my strength, my ideas, my peace? And when I'm trying to just white knuckle it and control it and do it myself, that's when the burden comes. But when I'm surrendered and I'm looking to God to be the source and to fulfill my needs, then busy can be done without being so burdened.
I like that. You know, for me, it's about my focus, which is similar to what you said. It's, am I enjoying the relationships with others, or am I obsessed with results? As soon as I move from relationships to results, that's where I get myself in trouble, and that's where I start waking up at 2:37 a.m. And, you know, because sometimes my relationships become my projects, I can go very quickly from enjoying my relationships to obsessing about the results I'm getting in the relationships, rather than just listening and loving and being present for people. So the question I have to constantly be asking is, am I being faithful to the output that God is calling me to, or am I fixating on the one right outcome? Is it my output, which is obedience and faithfulness to what I can actually do, or is it outcome driven? And it seems like when we're focusing on outcomes and results, when that's the hyper focus, then that's when we go from being busy, which a lot of us don't mind a certain level of busy, but burdened, that's when things become unbearable.
So Stacy told an amazing story, fascinating story, about her daughter's dance class and how she went from no mirrors to mirrors in her dance class, and how it changed her daughter's perspective because it changed her focus. So, Sherry, how have you found that we can remove the mirrors from our lives?
That was such a good analogy, that when she was focused on her instructor, you know, her mentor, then it was a good focus and she was getting better. But as soon as she focused on her fellow classmates, that was really the comparison dragged her down. Well, the other day I noticed in a Facebook group I belong to that a fellow writer was talking about a blog post she'd written that had gone viral. And can I just say that the only thing that has ever gone viral in my life is I've gotten pneumonia. Like, I've gone from bacterial to viral pneumonia, okay? That is it. Nothing I write ever goes viral. And so I started to click on her post, and I was like, maybe I can figure out the secret to going viral. And then I stopped. I caught myself before I did that, because I'm like, this is the worst motivation to read a blog post. My goodness, I'm trying to find the secret sauce, you know? And I mean, I could just feel, you know, I turned green with envy. And so I knew I was moving quickly into a bad place. But I stopped and I realized, hang on a second, I don't get my inspiration or my marching orders from other writers. God is the one who's called me to write about what I write about. I mean, I know when I'm writing if it's what I'm supposed to be writing about or not. And we've talked about the fact that I consider writing to be a form of prayer. And so I'm not going to gain my inspiration from this other writer. And I used to really wrestle. I was always so frustrated that instead of being positive, it seems like God calls me to write about things that seem negative. But then I realized a few years ago, it's not whether it's positive or negative, it's whether they're transformative. So I've gained a little bit of ground there. And so I decided before I went and read this gal's blog post, I decided to process, you know, what stance am I going to take? Am I going to imitate her and try to be her? Because I could tell that's where my brain was going. I'll analyze her post and then I'll write one just like it and then I'll go viral. Or will I make her my mentor and try to learn from her? And once I was kind of in that space, my heart was in the right place. I was able to read the article, I believe, with a much more open mind and heart, and see for sure why it went viral. Honestly, it turns out I was able to learn some things, but probably the biggest thing I learned was, I'm not going to write anything like that ever. And if I never go viral, that's okay. But it was important for me to have that change of heart before I clicked and read, so that I went in with the right motivation.
That's so good. Well, it's funny because, I mean, of course, I'm a victim of comparison also, but I have the opposite reaction usually, is I don't really try to imitate. My default is defeat. Oh. And I tend to look and compare and shut down. So I can never be her. I will never go viral. Whatever that looks like in our lives, right? So I'll shut down. I'm not going to try at all. I'm going to withdraw. And so I love your perspective. So instead of imitating or withdrawing, the third option that's the healthy option is learning. So that we do look at other people, not with like jealousy or envy, but that allows us to go, oh, but with admiration. And that's a good thing. And so that's a way to flip comparison. It's like, okay, I'm not going to be jealous or envious. I'm not going to imitate or withdraw. I'm just going to learn. I'm going to admire.
And it puts the focus less on the final product. Again, less on the outcome and more, what could I learn about her process? What could I learn that I could incorporate, not for an instant result, but for a best practice? Yeah, I totally agree with that.
So Stacy talked to us about having friends that are truth tellers, which I think that's just a value of my life, but also chocolate servers. I loved that.
Yay, chocolate!
To add that. And so tell us about a time, Sherry, that you had a friend that was a truth teller.
Well, it was not too long ago, and it was Kathy Lipp. And we had just done a radio interview taping, and I had bombed. Like, I had done a really poor job. And I asked her specifically, so this was part of the boundary, as I had said, can we please talk about it? And I had said, you know, I want to learn from it. And it was an interview about the book we wrote together, Overwhelmed. So she said, a question about the book isn't about the book. And then she said, I think what you were trying to answer was, but what they really wanted from you was. So, you know, she realized I was trying to give a very specific answer that was like from page 37 of the book. And she was like, well, they just really wanted you to talk about this general topic and have a good conversation. What she didn't say to me is, she didn't say, Sherry, you were so busy backsliding into perfectionism that you failed to listen to them at all. She just found a really nice way of saying, you know, when they ask you a question about the book, they don't want a book report. She said they just kind of want a good conversation about the general topic. And so it was really helpful for me to hear it that way, because, of course, I was starting to really slide into the feeling of abject complete failure. Because the problem with doing better as a recovering perfectionist is when we do way worse than we've been doing, it feels like, oh my goodness, I broke. I've gone all the way back again. It felt like Chutes and Ladders, Amy. That's what it felt like. It felt like, oh, I've made all of this slow, steady progress, praise God, and then boom, I went back to the very beginning, which is a terrible feeling. So the way she said this to me, I was able to hear her and go, wow, I need to work on extemporaneous speaking. And so what I decided to do as a result is I'm going to be going to Toastmasters. That was the one little skill that we realized, is that I do become deer in the headlights under pressure. And there's something that I can do to work on that. You know, here's the thing. When I told her, Kathy, can we do a little discussion of my performance yesterday? She did not say, why? Or, oh, you did fine. She said, sure. Which meant that there was recognition that there was something to talk about. So.
Well, and that's a good friend. And the chocolate in your relationship with Kathy is just love, deep love. Yes. I mean, she loves you so much. Well, and you know, you talk about Kathy a lot in these situations, and I talk about Mona a lot in these situations, my mentor from my women's ministry days. And I remember one day I was sitting in Mona's office, and a lot of things have been going wrong with this event that I was helping to plan. And so I was talking about one thing after another, and I was like, this is just spiritual warfare. This is the devil. Like, he is in here messing with stuff and blah, blah, blah. And she just quietly looked at me and she said, beloved, you know, that's how she always see. So the chocolate of love. She said, beloved, she said, the Lord is our banner.
Mm.
And I said, what? And she goes, you've been highlighting the work of Satan a lot, and the Lord is our banner. And it was this very gentle, very kindly said, sharp rebuke. There were several times in our relationships there were things like that, that I had a decision to make, whether to receive that and the truth of that, or to let the ouch of that make me build a wall. And because she loved me, because there was that chocolate of love, I was able to receive it and go, yes, what I want flying over me is not, oh, Satan is at work and he's winning, but God is over all of this. Yeah, there's some things going wrong, but God is the banner. The Lord is our banner. But the thing that I love about truth-telling relationships is that I could count on Mona, and there are others in my life too, to tell not only the truth in the hard situations, but in the good situations. So when Mona was giving me encouragement, it didn't feel like, yeah, she doesn't mean that. That's just fluff. I knew it was real and sincere and true because she had been faithfully truthful with me in the hard situations too. And I bet you would say the same thing about Kathy.
And about you, my Aww. Candid friend. Absolutely. Aww. Oh yeah. That is a beautiful point. If we have people that we know are accurate when they're having to tell us a hard truth, then we can also trust that they're accurate when they're encouraging and building us up. That is a great, great point. So tell us the scripture that you're pairing with these two episodes.
Psalm 146:2, which is, I will praise the Lord all my life. I will sing praise to my God as long as I live.
Mm.
What I started realizing as I processed what Stacy said to us and processed what I wanted to share today is that trying to be amazing ourselves is a praise problem. Because trying to generate our own amazing is trying to generate praise for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're fresh out of amazing, it's a time to look and say, well, so where's the praise going?
That is so good. So what's the bad rule for these episodes?
I'm responsible to earn praise.
Mm.
And then the truth that comes out of scripture is God is amazing always and worthy of praise.
I love that. I love that. So for me, the grit here is when things aren't going my way, it is so tempting for me to just throw up my hands and quit. When I don't feel amazing, when what's happening around me isn't amazing, then why bother? Why bother? And here's the thing. It's not the self-care kind of way where I reschedule a few things or delegate a few things to create some margin. I think sometimes we do need to quit some things for the purpose of health. What I'm talking about here is when I get in a snit because things just aren't amazing enough, and I really am. I mean, I hadn't thought of it that way, but I'm trying to build up my own praise and it's not happening. then it's just easy for me to throw it all out the window. Like, I don't even shower or floss. So for me, the grit part here is moderation, finding that willingness to persevere, be resilient, and keep moving forward, even though my ideals aren't coming to fruition, because it's not about me being ideal or amazing. Mm. What's the grace piece for you?
Well, that ties exactly into my grace piece, which is instead of being hard on myself when I'm fresh out of amazing and trying to generate some more, I just need to rest in the amazing one. And, you know, that's these things when I say them, sometimes I'm like, oh, so glib, so trite. But no, I mean, I've been in the last week just having this realization that I've been spending a lot of time scrolling social media and watching other amazing people and feeling less and less amazing in every moment I spend in social media. And, you know, it's just, it's a wrong focus. I'm putting my praise in the wrong place, even on other people. Mm. Makes us feel less amazing, right? But if we just rest in the amazing one, there's so much grace in that.
Head on over to gritandgracegirls.com/episode122.
There you'll find this week's transcript, our Digging Deeper download, the Bible verse art, and directions on how to enter a giveaway for Fresh Out of Amazing.
Grit and Grace is expanding thanks to the generosity of our Grit and Grace growth partners. You can learn more at www.patreon.com/gritandgracegirls. We would love to have you join our team.
Next week, we'll be talking to Susie Flory, author of So Long, Status Quo.
For today, grow your grit. Embrace God's grace. And when you run across a bad rule, you know what to do. Go right on ahead and break it.
Absolutely. Well, Stacy told this fascinating story about her daughter in dance class and when they went from no mirrors to mirrors and where the focus went. So tell us, Sherry, how have you found that you can remove the mirrors from your life?
I have no idea.
That's funny. I asked you the question because neither did I.
All right. So let's see. How about, oh, wait, no, I actually have an answer to this. I did the page the wrong way. Okay, so repeat the question.